Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
JT Tuimoloau is a hot recruit. That's understated. Washington wants him. Oregon wants him. USC wants him. Ohio State wants him. Alabama wants him. A whole bunch of places he's not visiting wants him. Brandon Huffman, 24/7 Sports, is the national recruiting editor. He's got his finger on the pulse of this, so to speak, and he's joining us now. This is an interesting development, Brandon, and I know a lot of people inside college football have been watching JT to see what he's going to do, but what's your sense on his visits and kind of what is the temperature of this recruitment right now?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that the recruitment temperature is warm, tending to get hot. You know, he took the first official visit the first weekend of June to Washington, spent last weekend graduating high school when a lot of guys in his class were coming home for the summer after enrolling early, and now he heads out on four visits over the next probably about 14 days, headed down to USC today to Wednesday, goes to Ohio State at the end of the week, goes to Oregon to begin the next week, and then Alabama to end things. So now we're really seeing the action get cooking. Now we're seeing it get hot, and really these next four visits are going to be very much an indicator of where he goes, including the visit to Washington he already took. Now we're getting down to crunch time for him.
All right, let's talk about that visit to Washington. Was he doing that just to kind of keep the locals happy and cross it off the list, or is it significant to Jimmy Lake that he went to Washington first?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always been one of those situations where Washington have the in-home or have a hometown advantage. I think from a business standpoint, from a scheduling standpoint, it was a logistical thing because he has to take all five of these official visits on four available weekends. Plus he had his high school graduation party, his last high school basketball game. Washington got that first visit because it didn't require any travel. He didn't have to do any kind of flying to get there. It was a quick 30, 45 minute jaunt. So the Huskies got the hometown visit, but I also think it's much deeper than just being the hometown school. They were the first to offer him for football. They were the first to offer him for basketball. They are the hometown school. They offer something that none of the other four finalists can offer, and that's proximity to all of his family. So I think Washington is very much a contender here, and I think the longer they stick around, the better their chances are to keep him. But like I said last week, they hit a grand slam on the visit, but it was the top of the first inning, and they still got to go up against the heart of the lineup for their opponents. Can they hold all the momentum of that first inning grand slam when you've got all the heavy hitters coming up? That we'll see.
You have a sense of, you know, JT's mindset. You've talked to him. You've talked to the family. I don't think there's anybody more plugged in than you, Brandon, when it comes to this. Some kids like to go away. They want to get away from home. Some kids like to be at home where their friends and family can easily come see them play. Do you get a sense that there's a strong feeling one way or the other with JT, or is it that he's just going to make the best football decision?
You know, probably 3 years ago, 2 years ago, I might have said that the family angle was never going to be something that the other schools could catch up with. You go to a high school football game at Eastside Catholic, you look up in the stands, there's 40 people with the number 33 t-shirt with Tuimoloau on the back of it. So that was something that Washington had always presented. But then over these last couple of years, when you see the Emeka Egbukas, the G. Scott Juniors, you know, so many players from the Northwest that have been willing to leave the region, I think he really became open to the fact that he could leave the Pacific Northwest and at minimum leave Seattle. But I also think that, you know, the longer it drags on, that maybe you start to think, hey, maybe I am better off at home. I've said this a couple times, that if we were in if there was no pandemic and he takes his visits like a normal recruit does in the time that it was given, he's leaving for college this week, and I think he's heading 100% out of the Northwest region. I think he's heading out of the Pac-12 region. I think he's going to Ohio State. But then we have the last year where he couldn't take the visits until June. He's got to compact and cramp them all in there. And now all these schools are kind of jostling. And now, you know, I would say things are probably a little bit more wide open than they were a year ago. So this has just been such an unconventional recruitment. It's been such an unconventional approach by he and his family that, you know, it's really hard to peg, you know, what things are going to be, you know, maybe really sway them over the next couple of weeks. But I certainly do think that he's as open as he's ever been to leaving the region. But at the same time, we've seen this time and time again. The longer a recruitment takes, the more opportunity that the hometown school has to keep them there.
JT Tuimoloau. How close am I, Brandon? Am I doing okay there?
It sounds good to me. Just call him JTT. Right. That always works.
All right. What are we talking about as a player? Kayvon Thibodeau, how does he compare skill set-wise to what Oregon has on the edge?
Yeah, I think that they're kind of different players in the fact that KT is a lot quicker. He's got more speed and explosiveness off the edge. He also plays, you know, much lighter than JT's ever played. You know, I think he was probably 240, 245 in high school. In fact, they played against each other when KT was a senior. Kayvon Thibodeau was a senior and JT was a sophomore. When Oaks Christian played against Eastside Catholic down in San Diego. And neither really did a whole lot in that game. It was a Zach Charbonnet show that game. But, you know, you take away those one game and you still see both those guys make impact wherever they were. I think KT is more that quick, speedy guy off the edge, whereas JT, you know, he's 270, 275, can play at about 290, but you can drop him into coverage. You can put him, not that you can't with Kayvon. I just think JT's such a unique athlete for his size. At no point will we've ever said with Kayvon Thibodeau, he can be the number one tight end in the country for his class. We've said that for 3 years with JT. If that's all he focused on, he'd be the number one tight end in the 2021 class. That's how good of a receiver he is. I mean, this is a guy who's averaged a double-double at a pretty good basketball program for the last 3 years. You look at his AAU team, you had Paolo Banchero who's going to Duke, Nolan Hickman who's going to Gonzaga, Drew Carter from Tigers, who's at Colorado now playing football and basketball. You got JT, so he's a high-level basketball player and just a unique athlete for how big he is. So I think they would complement each other really well. One's more of a quick, speedier guy. One's more of that strong physical presence who can show that athleticism, can show that quickness, and it becomes a pick your poison. You're going to double one. That leaves the other open right off the quarterback.
We're talking to Brandon Huffman, National Recruiting Editor, 24/7 Sports. What's Oregon's angle here with JT?
I think that they offer something that Washington can't, and that's a little bit more proximity to home, but not too much proximity to home. You know, when you look at USC, you got to get on a plane to go to USC. Otherwise, it's an 18-hour drive. Ohio State, Alabama, that's a long commute. Oregon, it's only a 4.5-hour drive, so it's still drivable. It's far enough away from home where, you know, mom and dad may not show up tomorrow, but it's also still close that if you need to get home or if they need to come visit, they're not too far and they can drive. So I think Oregon offers a little bit of a healthy medium in the sense that they are close to home, but not too close to home. They're not right there in the backyard. There maybe also won't be the pressure of being the number one player in the country at the hometown school. If you don't immediately contribute, a lot of times when you're the local kid and you stay home, a lot of times if you don't contribute right away, those fans start to get on you. I mean, if you're the number one player in the country, the pressure is going to be there no matter what. But when you sometimes can be looked at as that hometown hero and the savior status, sometimes the pressure becomes that much greater. So I think Oregon offers a little bit of distance between he and Seattle. And I think that, you know, you look at their track record over the last decade with pass rusher. You know, Kayvon Thibodeau is probably a top five pick. Forrest Buckner is one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. You got Eric Armstead, who's a first-rounder himself and a high-paid pro bowler as well. So you look at, you know, just look at what Tim DeRuiter was able to do at Texas A&M with Von Miller. Now he comes in as the new defensive coordinator. He's got the opportunity to have not one elite pass rusher, but potentially two elite pass rushers. You know, from a defensive standpoint, Oregon gives him something to, you know, be able to be utilized by a guy who's had a elite pass rusher that he's kind of let loose. So I think Oregon offers a couple things that none of the other four schools do, most notably the proximity to home without being too proximate.
Yeah, I love that. His order of visits, because, you know, you mentioned Washington, that made sense, didn't require travel, but it goes USC, Ohio State, Oregon, Alabama. Do you want to be last there, Brandon? Tell us how recruiting works. Do you want the last conversation, or does that matter?
Well, you want the last conversation when you know that Nick Saban's going to have the last conversation. So everybody would have loved to have that last visit when they realize, oh, my goodness, the last person in the world we want to recruit against is Nick Saban, and now we have to recruit against him when he's the last in-person visit that JT is going to be able to have before he comes to a decision. So I think that's something that really, it was funny. The day that he announced his five official visits, the psychoanalyzing that came from each of the prospective fan bases of what their visit meant, where it fell in the pecking order, why that was important to have it there. But the one thing that the other four fan bases all kind of said was, we don't like the fact Nick Saban gets that last official visit. So, in most cases, you don't want to have the middle visit. It's kind of like the hat game. If you look at the hat game, when guys pick their hat, you look for the one that's flat bill, the one that has them that's going to look perfect on the head. I don't think you can psychoanalyze visit dates so much, but what you don't ever want to do is leave Nick Saban to have the last conversation with the kid. And so I think Alabama should feel decent about themselves because Nick Saban walks in, everybody else has done their part to recruit him, and then all he has to do is walk in with some rings and say, you coming here or not? That's kind of a hard conversation for any high school kid to pass up.
We're talking to Brandon Huffman, 24/7 Sports, about five-star defensive end recruit JT Tuimoloau. Let's look at the Pac-12 versus the field. If it's USC, Oregon, or Washington, how important would that be, Brandon, to the Pac-12?
I think it would be huge because you look at the fact that the Pac-12 has been, and deservedly so, a bit of a punching bag when it comes to the national media with so many players out west. I mean, you look at the five schools that are probably the most consensus to be in the top five in college football, with Oklahoma, with Georgia, with Alabama, with Clemson, and Ohio State, and all five of those schools have quarterbacks that came from the Pac-12 footprint. So the knock on the Pac-12 has been, not only is their product on the field not going great, but recruiting-wise, and I think a lot of it's because USC recruiting hasn't been great. I mean, it was better this last year, but it wasn't great for a couple classes before. And you start losing all these Southern California kids, these West Coast kids to national powers, and it just shows that, hey, the Pac-12 is down on the field and off the field. So if they were able to keep, if one of those three schools was able to keep JTT in the Pac-12 footprint, with Corey Foreman, who's the number one player in the composite, JT, the number one player in 24/7 Sports, and those two, the top two players in the country, and then a Pac-12 school could potentially get both those, or two different Pac-12 schools could potentially get those. After you had a year where Justin Flo stays in the Pac-12 footprint, 2 years after Kayvon, suddenly the narrative starts to change, and it gives you a little bit more talent on the field to compete. And maybe you don't need a 12-team playoff to get the Pac-12 back into the playoff line. Maybe now the Pac-12 can get in there before it expands to 12. But I think keeping those top players in the West instead of watching, if you watch the Sugar Bowl this year, Clemson and Ohio State, I mean, how many times do we see a West Coast player make a play in that game late, whether it was in the Rose Bowl earlier in the day in Dallas? You saw Najee Harris making a play. You saw, Ian Brooks keeping his team in it. Two Californians right there. I think it's something that the West Coast needs is to keep these guys out here so the narrative doesn't continue to beat you up off the field in addition to on the field.
Brandon Huffman, 24/7 Sports National Recruiting Editor. Brandon, you talked to his family. Do you have any sense on, is this a family decision? Is this JT's call? Like, how will this decision be made?
I think the answer to both those questions is yes. I do think it is JT's decision, but I also do think the family is going to factor in. He's from a very tight family, a very tight-knit community. And I said earlier, he went to Eastside games over the previous 3 years, and you would see 50 people in the stands all wearing his jersey. So, this isn't just JT. This is the whole family. And, as his parents have said from the beginning, when they were kind of getting involved in this recruiting process, when he got his first offer 3 weeks into his freshman year, their stance then was it's going to be a family decision and it takes a village to raise them. And they've always been cognizant of thanking the entire village around them, in the figurative sense, that have helped with JT. So while I ultimately do think it will be his decision, I do think his family is going to have a pretty large say in this. And I think that's how JT's approached it from the beginning. It was never a thing where his parents said, we're making this decision for you. It's been JT out of respect saying, I want you guys to have as much of a say in this decision as I do. So I think it will be his decision ultimately, but I think there's going to be a heavy dose from his parents and his family that will maybe influence his decision one way or the other.
Handicap this. Give me your top three, Brandon. Like, who are the real players here if you had to cast that vote today?
Well, I've said Ohio State for the longest time as the slightest, ever so slightest of leaders even though that's the only school of the five that he hasn't visited. So I'm still going to keep them there, but I would say it's probably more of a Final Four. I know it sounds like a little bit of a cop-out, and even though he's visiting USC, I still think USC is a distant fifth in this. I think Washington's made up a lot of ground, largely because of the official visit, largely because of the proximity to home. I think Alabama has always been a factor here. I thought it was an Ohio State-Alabama chase all along, but Oregon was making that compelling Pac-12 move. But now I think Washington is causing some reason for the other three schools to start to realize they have to pick it up on their respective official visits. So I would say that, you know, it's four schools out of five, but like I go back to Washington, did they do enough on that first visit to make not just a rally to get pulled even, but enough to pull ahead? Because now he's got the visit to SC this weekend, or this week, the visit to Ohio State, the only school he's never seen at the end of the week, and then Oregon and Alabama battling each other next week. I think this race is still way too close to call here. But what I am confident in saying is that I think USC, unless they completely knock it out of the park over the next 48 hours, I think they've got the biggest hill to climb.
Oregon probably leaning a little bit on Joe Salavea as, you know, being involved in this recruiting. Will that matter to JT and his family?
Well, it will, because interestingly enough, Joe Salavea and JT's dad, Ponce, are from the same village in Samoa. So I think that that's something that, you know, that family angle will play out. But at the same time, I think that you look at what Oregon has really done in ramping things up. I mean, Oregon's been a presence in this recruitment for a long time, but they've really ramped it up since the hiring of Tim DeRuiter. So as much as Salavea will have an influence and an impact on it, I think DeRuiter probably tends to get should be getting a little bit more of the attention from the Oregon fan base and what he's done at his previous stops, more so than Joe Salavea. But having that family connection, that hometown connection between their families, certainly doesn't hurt Oregon.
Brandon Huffman, you're the best, 24/7 Sports. Follow him on Twitter. Read him on 24/7 Sports. Thank you, my friend.
Anytime, John. I appreciate it.
There he is. Judah Newby. Who gets JT to a Malau-Lau?
I'm going with Saban. I'm not going to bet against Nick Saban getting his guy. I love the Washington take, though. Not for the sake of Washington getting better, per se, but, you know, we were kind of writing them off like they're too close to home. But apparently they did really well with their visit with JT. But again, what Brandon said about Oregon's positioning, how could you not find Oregon attractive if you're a D lineman right now with what they did with Defoe and Armstead and what they're currently doing with Thibodeau and DeRuiter's background with Von Miller? JT's got to be thinking about the Ducks very seriously, but he's probably right. It's probably a Final Four more than it is a top one or a top two.
I'm going to say if he goes to a Pac-12 school, I think it's going to be Oregon.
Yeah.
And I think there's a real risk, like we have seen with other players, of him picking Alabama or Ohio State. But this is a huge pivot point for an Oregon program. And I just wonder how much the Kayvon Thibodeau, hey, he's going to be the number one pick in the draft. Hey, he's the face of the franchise. I wonder how much that helps Oregon here. This is fascinating to me. And if I'm Mario Cristobal, I like that I'm going fourth, but I would love to be going fifth in this. I don't want Nick Saban talking to him after I talk to him. All right, leave it here. Our big splash is coming up. Our big splash, it's the one thing you need to know. Here it is.
This is
the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it.
Where?
Down there.
Must be.
The big splash. Brought to you by the Exergen Twice Daily Thermometer.
Well, it was late last week that Portland State got some news that it's probably confused by. Oregon State, it seems, is going to play more games at Providence Park in 2022 than Portland State will. Portland State long made the building now known as Providence Park its home for football games. Oregon State is going to be renovating Reser Stadium. The West Side renovation will be going on beginning at the end of this upcoming football season and stretching all the way through the 2022 season. As part of that, Oregon State will play a home football game against Montana State at Providence Park in Portland. The news was greeted, I think, with mixed reviews. There were a lot of people saying, oh, it'd be cool. We'll get to see Oregon State up in Portland. That's great. It's good for the Beavers. It's good for some fans who want to go see a game. It's probably good for the Timbers and the Thorns that get to rent out their facility. But Portland State could not have been happy about that. The Vikings are playing their home football games out in Hillsboro, despite being block away from Providence Park, a few blocks away in the downtown corridor. Portland State can't be happy about that. And I'm told we're blindsided by that on Friday when that announcement was made. So keep an eye on that as the Vikings remain in search of their home.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.